You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
And welcome back, everybody. We're back once again.
Hello.
I'm Mike.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Ruhi.
We keep saying we don't have to introduce ourselves.
But oh, we should introduce ourselves.
We'll just, whatever, yeah. It's the flow. Yeah. We like it. It's good.
Somewhat consistency, yeah. You know. Yeah.
If you're listening, you know us and you like our introductions. So this week we're talking about, I think, a really fascinating topic because we mentioned it in last week's podcast, fear of missing out or FOMO, which comes up quite a bit with regards to a lot of different topics, but we're going to really talk about adolescence and sleep patterns and how it kind of connects to that. And this all comes off of a presentation that Ruhi did on adolescent sleep that Andrew and I got a chance to attend. So why don't we just start by letting everyone know, like, for those who don't know, Ruhi, what is fear of missing out?
So this is actually, I didn't know about this until recently.
Oh, as I was starting at your presentation.
I've heard it before.
I've heard the comment before,
mainly about, like, living in big cities.
Fear of missing out?
Yeah, that someone said that the biggest difference between living in Kingston and Toronto was in Kingston that he constantly lived. In Toronto, he constantly lives with a fear of missing out, whereas in Kingston, he never felt that. He knew he had a sense of what was going on in the community, what social things were happening, but in Toronto and other big cities he's lived in, he's felt that constant fear of, if I go to bed right now, I'm missing something.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, so I've heard it once before.
Because this is more, it wasn't a consolidated thought that I had paid attention to. You know, you think about things, but there's not an actual language.
Yeah.
And then I got introduced to this particular language in terms of, like, youth and adolescence.
Yeah.
And this was actually a study that came out of Glasgow by Scott and Woods, and it was published. That particular paper on fear of missing out was published in the Journal of Adolescence in 2018. However, I didn't know about this particular paper until at the World Sleep Congress, where most of my time was dedicated to sleep in adolescence. So they are talking about this in terms of social media.
Yeah.
This paper was just about the use of phone at night.
Yeah.
Right? So because we talked about that their me time is later in the evening when they've done all their things they needed to do and they're kind of left alone in their bedrooms. And most of them are, not most, I shouldn't say that, some of them, are actually, they have their phone on throughout the night rather than having it on airplane mode. And in my conversations with kids, what they are saying is that they do not want to miss out in terms of texting, if they are in a group chat, because adolescence is an interesting time where you are separating yourself in terms of who you are. You're separating yourself from your parents. Therefore, the parental influence, by the way, is what decreases too, right? Because you're separating yourselves from that. And they kind of need that space because adolescence is an incredible time in terms of figuring who you want to be. You know, you're building your own sense of being. And this is also where peer pressure comes into play. You want to also want to belong to a group.
Yeah.
And in terms of wanting to belong to a group, if you are not then responding to text or you're not part of the group chat, what they feel like, they have this anxiety. Like, if I'm not responding to my friend's text or if I'm not part of this group chat, that I'm going to miss something out.
Yeah.
And if I'm missing something out and I'm not participating in that discussion, then tomorrow when I go to school, you know, I might not be liked as much.
Yeah.
And this, what, in terms of sleep, now what it's doing is it's like truly fragmenting their sleep completely because they are sleeping and waking up to texts.
Right.
This is called what's called an on-call brain. So
doctors,
nurses, people who pagers are on, right? They that sleep is very, very different from being, you know, either up all night, as shift workers do, because that's more fragmented sleep, because your brain is constantly turned on because you're expecting a phone call, you're expecting your page to go on. And in teenagers, you're expecting your phone to go on about a text that's going to come at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So you're not getting your consolidated sleep. Yeah. You're not getting the quality of sleep that you need.
Yeah.
And then in the morning, you're not feeling so good. And you are, you know, end up, if you're not feeling so good, if you've not had good sleep, then studies have clearly shown that you end up having negative effect the next day.
Yeah.
And then how you respond to things throughout the day is also dictated by that feeling, that particular mood that you're going to be in, right? You're going to be more sensitive to things, right? Yeah. And then you're even more scared.
Yes, that, of course. Yeah.
Like, you know, anything, you know, saying, oh, you know, red sweater, you can take it whichever way you want to take it. Yeah. And if you're in a negative state of mind, that might be taken as in a more negative
absolutely
context.
Especially when you're talking about a device and a medium of communication that is already kind of devoid of tone. So context and how you read into things is actually quite important. So you're talking about a device that you read a text message, and we used to say this like as a theater exercise. You can say hello in about 100 different ways with 100 different meanings, and just a simple hello can change the way you interact with somebody. So
can you give us an example? Because now I'm curious. Well, give us three different ways of saying hello.
So if I can, okay, so I could say hello, and then I could say hello, and then I could say hello.
I see.
So it's a variation of hi, like I'm really excited to see you, to like, oh, hi, to I'm kind of scared to have this conversation with
you.
And
it's all about tone.
It's all about tone.
Yeah.
So if I receive a text message from someone, I'm just thinking back to my adolescence. You're texting or you're messaging on Facebook, friends, or people who are classmates, maybe people who you have a romantic interest in. The simple subtlety of how you choose to read something can change how you respond to it.
Yeah, and how you perceive it.
Yeah.
And that also, again, depends on your state of mind, how you're perceiving it.
Which is interesting because then you're getting yourself into a little bit of a cycle where if you did not get enough sleep the previous night and you've got this fear of missing out, so you're on your phone, you're texting people, you're messaging to people, and you misread something or you because of the sleep you're a little more sensitive to something, it could make that fear worse because you could worsen the situation.
And also the thing about this is, Mike, that they don't have that regulatory process because that part of the brain is still developing. The frontal lobes that control that regulatory process, that controls empathy, that controls reactivity, all of that is actually being developed. This particular age is where it's all happening. And if you don't have that process of self-regulation, which my entire thesis is based upon self-regulation and how difficult that process is for anybody.
Yeah.
We're asking teenagers who don't even have that system fully functional in their brain to then self-regulate themselves.
Yeah.
Like, how
that's
do you?
True.
So you have, this is an interesting conundrum now.
Yeah.
You have teenagers who want to be their own person, are being influenced by their peers, and then separating themselves from their parents at the same time and having no self-regulation. Jeez. So, I mean, like, really.
Well, it puts you in such a situation, and I think that this is something that kind of talked about last week, is how can you put the onus on them? This is almost like an unfair situation.
I know.
You're kind of putting young people in a position where you're, by putting the onus on them, it's not fair. You're kind of getting into the sense of, well, I think we talked about it last week of like that hearing, why are you so tired? Or why you're always so tired. It's kind of unfair because like, well, look at all these things going on. Of course they're tired. Of course it's the social time and the me time is connected to a screen and keeps people up at night. And you can't just put the phone away and you can't not have a phone because you will miss out. And I feel like the fear of missing out can be as powerful as being on your phone for an hour,
anxiety is paramount. And actually, there was an article that I was actually the book that I'm reading because I'm constructing this entire thing on youth in digital age because, you know, this is an incredibly interesting topic in terms of sleep. Andy Furlong, who does youth studies, his quote on that was that the social, economic, and political problems youth encounter most often are now seen as individual failings solved only through personal action. And then the discussion goes on. It talks about, in this particular article, they're talking, or in this particular book, they're saying, you know, the key feature of the digital age is an entrenched fallacy of individualism and individual responsibility and control, which acts, A, to obscure social relations between people and institutions, and suggest that we solve our problems individually. So you're putting the onus on the individual. I mean, look what Apple did.
Yeah.
What did they do? They ended up eating up all of the apps that were providing parental control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what did they do? They said, we have created our own system. We're going to tell you how much time you're spending on entertainment, mm-hmm. how much time you're spending on news. They're giving you this data coming out. And really, who's looking at it? Are you guys looking at your phones and going, let's see, my weekly thing of like, at the
maybe my data usage so I can keep my bill down.
We're not like looking at how much time we're spending. And in the meantime, they're trying to make screens as more like as much tactile, you know, as you possibly can. And then putting the onus on whom?
A child whose brain is still
developing.
Yeah. We'll give you the information, but we'll put the onus on you to do something.
Yeah.
With it. It's like,
this is not the system that's good for, you know, our society, period.
No. And it is interesting that you bring up the fact that phones are being made to be more tactile, because you brought that up in your presentation is your brain wants that physical contact. So that's what a phone is doing. It's giving you that feeling. And even being older, I can understand that. There are moments I force myself, okay, today I'm putting my phone in another room and I'm going to my other rooms in my apartment and I'm doing things, whatever. And about the first half hour, is as though you've detached a part of me, and I feel so strange. Like I've never been. Andrew knows this about me. I'm not into the simple luxuries of intense alcohol and other things. Like I could pretty much do.
I really
nothing.
Wish you could see the hand gestures right now. By the way,
just flowing. The simple joys that people enjoy with their activity, which I'm not judging, but it's just not a me thing. But that's the first time where I feel like I have a need to have my phone beside me. It's not just, but it's true. It's not just the physical contact. It's like, if I don't have my phone beside me, I feel weird. Mm-hmm. Like, well, wait a minute. What if someone's trying to get in contact with me? But on the weekends, sometimes, and like today on a Saturday, I leave it on beside my bed, I walk into the other room, I do the things that I need to do, I do all the stuff, maybe even I leave and go on a walk, and it's just so hard that first half hour.
Yeah, I have no problem. I actually do this all the time.
Yeah.
I actually put it on airplane mode. This is what I do. And not because, I think because in terms of processes when I'm like need to think or I'm processing information, all of that, I actually don't want to be disturbed by that.
Yeah.
But then I'm almost coming up to 48 years old. And these are systems that I've had to develop. These are the skills that
Absolutely.
I've had to develop.
Yeah.
And then we're expecting this level from a child whose brain is still being developed without, you know.
That was going to be my next point is it took me, like I'm 32, it took me a very long time to develop that system for me for it to work. Because I do the same thing when I'm editing or when I'm sitting down and doing a task. I'll put my phone somewhere where I don't know where it is and it's on silent, so I just can't be disturbed. But that took a while to sort of force that into it. And I think I look back at 17-year-old me. I don't think that would be a fair thing to put on 17-year-old me. I didn't, you know, I didn't know. I was doing other things. I was, you know, again, your brain is still developing. And I don't think that's fair to look back and say, well, you should have done this at this age.
No.
I don't think
please
that's a
don't,
fair thing.
Do not go back and do that because we didn't have that information.
There's
no point in reflecting back on that.
I do that all the time where I reflect back and like, why were you so stupid, young Mike? And it's like, that's not fair. It's not fair.
Be kind to yourself, Mike. We've been talking about kindness.
Exactly.
Kind to yourself. Please.
And it's hard. I always look at past me as this completely different person, and it's
you
true.
You were a completely different
exactly.
person.
Exactly. It's true, and I do it in an unfair way, but you should.
Yeah. No. our circumstances and our environments, all of those actually also dictate, right? Like where we were at that particular point in time in our lives. And I don't think it's fair to judge ourselves so harshly, you know, certain circumstances, but I don't want to go into that right now. You can, but not these things.
So I think that we bring up a really interesting point when it comes to that you can't just remove some of these things. You can't just, for the sake of, oh, well, there's a fear of missing out, so we're going to, you know, but this phone is affecting this kid's sleep, so therefore no phone time for bed. Well, that's going to also create issues.
No, I think, but it does require addressing, mm-hmm. because if it is affecting your physical and mental well-being, then that requires addressing. If it is going to affect how your brain develops in a negative way, then it does require addressing. Digital media, like technology, is part of our existence, period.
Definitely.
I mean, it really is. But I think the conversation that we need to bring out, we need to talk about, and I think we're going to be talking about, especially with, which we are so excited about with our teen panel, is about this, is about like where they are in terms of their use of social media. How is it that they're using their social media, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tool
Absolutely.
That we can use
we agree with
for
that.
The
totally.
Betterment of...
You're talking to the right people.
Yeah, I am talking
to
the right
choir
people. Yeah, but it's a tool that you need to use. It's the same thing with anything. Like your body is a tool. How do you use it, right?
Yeah.
Your physicality, your cognitive abilities, these are all tools. And we need to develop skills. And I think that needs to be our focus. And how do you do that? By providing information, by engaging them in the conversation. This is very much their conversation. This is the world that they are living in. And they will be living in. They have inherited it. And this is a conversation that we need to be having with them and figuring out, okay, these are your realities. This is the digital ecologies that we are moving in. How do we make it so it is for the betterment, that it is for the well-being overall?
Well, you bring up a really good point, and I'm just grabbing something because I'm not sure if either of you have heard of or have read this, but there is this book that someone introduced me to called Anti-Social Media, and it's all about, I believe it's from, the actual title of the book is Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. Now, this is a politically charged book, but there's several chapters on social media that take it in that wrong direction that you're sort of bringing up now, that we talk about these things, and there are some people who can make money off of saying, well, social media is negative, but it's not going anywhere. And like we're saying, it's a very useful tool.
There's a negative and positive impact of everything.
Oh, exactly.
Everything
That's
has a negativity and positivity.
Everything that exists and every tool we have has a negative and positive side. It's how we use it. But the topic of social media has always been around the negative of it. It is never talked about in media or even in societal conversation that I've seen. It's never talked about it in the positive ways. It's always talked about it negatively. But how it's used negatively is all about user preferences.
Yeah, but then, Mike, we're gonna come back to the same argument here. How do you regulate it in a brain that is still developing?
Exactly.
Right?
No, that's
how do you,
that's
and
the
how,
problem.
And
yeah.
Not only
yeah.
just in terms of like development in terms of frontal lobes, which I don't know whether we touched upon this episode or previous episode.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, where you are that differentiates in terms of empathy, in terms of reasoning and critical thinking, that part is still developing.
Mm.
In the youth.
Yeah.
So how do you, there's no discussion in terms of where we need to talk about in terms of rules or regulations around that. What is the age of cigarette smoking again?
19.
It's what, and drinking is around
19
in Ontario.
19 in Ontario. And we have regulations around those things.
Yeah.
Is this a discussion we need to start?
License for cars too. Don't forget that. I mean, you have to be a certain age to get your first learner's permit.
So why do we need that? Just out of curiosity. We're considering at the age of 18 or 19 is we're thinking, oh, they're moved into somewhat of, you know, adult, making reasonable.
Yes.
Although the brain is still developing, by the way. That's still going on. That's not the appropriate age either.
Reasonable is a good word.
Yeah, and addiction.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
because those are the things. But shouldn't we be talking about that perhaps now in terms of like digital media, like use of how we're using the media? Where should we be? Like, I'm not talking about state regulation, but what I'm talking about is that this is something we need to really be addressing, especially if it is impacting the overall mental well-being of our teenagers, which are over 3 billion users right now in the world.
Yeah.
And how many of them do you think are self-regulated?
Oh, I would say very few. Yeah, maybe a handful. Maybe a handful, because you always, you know, I don't believe in absolutes, so I'm sure there are some people who are able to do that. But that's, I would say that's a very small percentage, I would say.
And I think so this is like perhaps, I think it's going to be very, this is an interesting discussion, an interesting conversation in terms of social media as a tool and how we use it. And
yeah, and I find it interesting, like you bring up good points, because like what is the expectation here when I think the adults, the educators, even the parents, and this isn't a knock against anyone, but no one understands it, quite frankly. No one quite gets the platform. Nobody is quite understanding it. All the approaches I've ever heard, and I believe me, I have taken more social media workshops than I would care to.
Well, this is also part of your business, too, right?
It is. So, like, and it's why the business exists, because of all these – I ran to Andrew about all these terrible things I've been to. They've all addressed it the same way when parents have asked. We'll take it away from them. That's not an answer.
No.
That is not an
take
answer.
Away, take away for – like how long? There was didn't we post? Like I think we posted an article on our social media where the mother actually didn't buy her children smartphones at all. That she decided. And then there was like this very interesting study that came out that was looking at the sleep patterns of ultra-Orthodox Jewish adolescents, which was I thought
very interesting study,
fascinating because they didn't have access to social media or actually. Any media. There were, I think there were like three groups. Like there were those that have no access, those that had partial access, but no actual, it was controlled as to what they could do. They didn't have access to like social media, and then the secular kids. And what they found with the ultra-Orthodox Jewish kids who have no access to social media, they had longer sleep times.
Yeah.
Their own subjective understanding of their sleep was also that they had better sleep.
Yeah.
And what was interesting was the kids who had micro uses of the media, of the their sleep was decreased significantly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Even micro users.
Micro users.
It was such a big difference.
Yeah, and it was it wasn't even like close to their bedtime. That they were, and they were probably using it for homework or other, you know, related activities.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was such an incredibly interesting study.
Oh, I thought that's fascinating, especially it's such a minor, it's almost like a minor dose of social media makes a massive difference to your sleep patterns, which is very interesting.
Very interesting. Like their total sleep time decreased, their sleep onset latency, which is like how long it takes you to fall asleep from when you turn the lights off to in sleep lingo, first epoch of sleep, that also decreased. That increased significantly in that particular group. And that second wave of that study is going to come out soon. And that's going to be an interesting data to be reviewing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, next week when we bring the young people in and we talk to 14s about social media and about their connection, especially with school, and it's a great conversation because it goes into a lot of different areas. But I think it's interesting because we need to listen and understand their perspective because they're living it, and like we've talked about before about reality, their reality is this digital world, and that isn't necessarily going to change. So how do we now work within that and work that we have, that is what I hope people will start taking out of our discussions here and stop bringing these. I tell you, you both would be frustrated coming out of these workshops where the approach is, well, just take it away. Well, you know, this thing's evil and we have to get rid of it.
And making it seem that's not easy, too.
It's complicated. It's complex. It's not simple. Nothing is
no,
simple.
No, and technology like to, is like you know, 20 steps ahead of us.
Oh, absolutely. You know, who knows like, what's 5 years yeah, from now? Who knows
I barely like have an understanding of one thing, and then the other thing pops up, and you're just like, what is happening?
I'm starting
How
to
do
get
I
there
actually
now.
Yeah. keep up with this? How do we navigate these digital ecologies when we have no understanding of how these are working? And you're looking at, what, 10-year data? There's no longitudinal data. We have no idea.
Yeah.
As to the overall longer impact in terms of our society.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah, sleep-deprived kids on digital media, anxious, aggression, you know, global burden of disease has put addiction now. It's high up on their list, addiction in adolescence. So what? How much money does that take? According to them, trillions. And I'm just wondering where those trillions are coming from. You know, there's a great article, I think, CBC, couple of months ago where a family had to put up around $120,000 to help their kid out of addiction.
Wow.
That's the real cost. That's the real cost of addiction.
Wow.
Crazy.
How does middle income families deal with that?
We're not
prepared for this. I mean, this is a full on epidemic that is at our doorstep right now.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point of why you need to start addressing things and having these conversations, which is something that you brought up. It's something worth addressing, and for the social cost, for the personal cost, for the financial cost, like these things are worth discussing and addressing, and I think that this is hopefully the first step. For a lot of people, let's listen to the conversation now and let's start talking about it. Let's start these conversations and start being active
and collectively. This is a collaborative process.
Absolutely.
You know how our understandings and our approaches to it. Not all social media is bad. We're using platforms to inform. I mean, that's what we're doing.
Our whole approach is social media is neither positive or negative. It's how you use it that makes it positive or negative. So if you use it in a positive way, it will bring good things to you. And I think we're an example of that. Mm-hmm. People right now are listening to us because we were able to reach them on social media, and this is a positive thing.
I know.
Ruhi Sleep, by the way.
Yes. Follow at Ruhi Sleep. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Lots of great articles.
Yeah, let's plug ourselves in there for sure.
So just as we wrap up here, I do want to quickly give one more shout out to what's special thing that's happening next week.
Our teenagers, teen panel.
Coming. So mm-hmm. Do you just want to give us a little preview? What's that going to be like next week? What are people going to hear?
It's going to be their conversation. We're just letting them have this conversation on their sleep. Where they are with it in use of, like, how they're using their social media and the impact, negative or positive, that's having, that it's having on them. And they're talking about, you know, their psychosocial pressures that they are facing and actual conversations of what they think we need to change.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the best parts of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Because they are heavily involved in this, you know, and invested in this. They've thought about this process, and they're a bunch of, you know, very intelligent kids.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely tune in. Get that next week. That'll be next week's podcast. Tune in for sure. It is an extra long episode, just so everybody does know. It's about 90 minutes long, but you will not be disappointed. You'll see when you listen. We did not want to interrupt the flow of this one. Yeah. It's a great conversation.
Very,
so.
Very.
Definitely download it next week. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening once again. And we're going to continue these conversations next week with young people talking about adolescent sleep.
Bye for now.